Hello, I'm Sophia Wilson, Boat's Digital Content Director, and welcome to this special Big Boat interview. This week, I caught up with Ian Flanagan, CEO and founder of Volley, a financial management platform that's specifically tailored to high net worth individuals with multiple assets, such as superyachts, private jets, and properties. Known for his straight-talking manner, Ian's career started a long way away from fintech, on the tennis court. During the interview, we talked about his experiences growing up as a professional tennis player, the pressures of being on court, and how a career-ending injury eventually led to him setting up Volley. We also discussed the challenges of launching a new business into the superyacht community and the difficulties that captains face in trying to meet modern expectations for financial management while also running a superyacht. Finally, with Volley now expanding its services to the music industry, we also talked about how the two industries compare and what's next for the Volley platform. I hope you enjoy the interview. Ian, thank you so much for joining us on the Boat Briefing podcast today. Can you tell us where you're joining us from? It looks very grand.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's not that grand, I'm afraid. It's lovely. I'm in the Metropole Hotel in Monaco at the moment, so we're overseeing some clients. So you've got me pre-meeting, so I will try my best to keep the noise down in the room from next door, but I'll try.
Early, if we had to get you out of bed for this.
No, I'm afraid not. I wish. Some of us do work. I was at an 8 o'clock breakfast with lawyers this morning talking about all sorts of wonderful things about yachting. So,
And for those of you who don't already know you, you're obviously the founder and CEO of financial management platform Volley. But your first career was a long way away from fintech. You were a professional tennis player.
I was, yes. So I started playing, I don't know how much detail you want on this, Fi, but I started playing when I was about 4 or 5. My family played a little bit. My brother was quite a good tennis player, kind of county level. One thing led to another, and then went on to the GB team and progressed, and then went on to the tour officially kind of around 17, 18 after a bout of glandular fever. And then played till about 23, 24, and then sadly got injured. So I kind of had to hang the rackets up and go and get a proper job, as my dad would say. It was good. I played, it was amazing. Played. I was very lucky enough to play Wimbledon and do a lot of wonderful things. And I think we counted one time I'd played tennis in 67 different countries, which if you just go off the travelling side, that's quite not many people are lucky enough to do that amount of travelling.
And it's quite relentless, that tour though, isn't it? In terms of kind of always travelling from one city to the next, one tournament to the next.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think it's got worse. I was probably in the mix of just when it was really kind of getting a lot more professional. They say about the old football world where they used to go out and have, drinks the night before and stuff. And it wasn't quite like that. But I think the athletes now are way better shape and way more intense than we ever were. They've brought, they'll be traveling now with 3 or 4 sports and strength conditioning coaches and flexibility coaches and mental health coaches, etc. So it's a lot more intense now, but it was still hard. You were still away from your family at 15 years old. I was away for 8 weeks at one stint. For the whole summer I went away, didn't see mum and dad for 8 weeks, which is hard. So when you're that young, but yeah, it is definitely intense, but I don't think it was as bad when I was on the tour as it is now.
And were you able to do most of your training in the UK until you hit that kind of 15 year old point, or did you do, because obviously someone like Andy Murray famously went to Spain, kind of relocated, did you have to do that as well?
Yeah, I did, but I didn't do it as extreme as Andy. Andy went away to Barcelona, to one of the academies there. I didn't do it quite that extreme, but naturally, like anything, right, you eventually, that kind of big fish in a little pond or whatever the phrase is, eventually you outgrow the people around you that you can't practice with. So you have to go and, start practicing. But the time that I turned pro, they just turned... I'd played, ironically, the Youth Olympics 3 years earlier, and the Bath University had become quite a high-tech kind of tennis academy, so quite a few international players came to the same academy. So I was quite lucky that I stayed in the UK and trained down there. I mean, yes, I was away from my family, and yeah, I had to go and get my own apartment at 16 years old, which a lot of people don't do, but I didn't go as extreme as a lot of people go to Florida or Barcelona or, the multitude of different academies that people go to. But eventually you just outgrow. I was from a little village in Wales, and there wasn't that many people that were playing tennis to a high level, and the whole community was probably only about 3,000 people.
Do you remember at what age you first beat your parents?
Yeah, about 5. They weren't very good.
And what about your older brother?
That was more contentious. Probably, I don't know when I would have beat Steve. He was 6 years old. He was 6 years older than me, so probably when I was about 14, maybe, I started beating him.
How did that go down?
Not very well. That was a lot more contentious, yeah. Yeah, that's always been a sore one. But he's pretty good. He still plays, to be fair.
And obviously, apart from beating your older brother, which was clearly a career highlight, what were some of your kind of career highlights or most memorable moments?
the obvious ones really are Queens. Playing Wimbledon Centre Court was amazing. That was great. Playing Queens tournament the week before, Stella Artois beat Philippoussis there, who was world number six at the time and Wimbledon finalist. And then probably the Olympic gold juniors. Whilst it was juniors, it was still just an amazing experience. You know, I carried the flag out at the closing ceremony. I was one of the six people or six gold medalists that carried the flag and stuff. So as a 13-year-old, that was amazing. But yeah, the rest of it was just Wimbledon and Queens really were the two highlights. I was lucky enough to play at the French Open on juniors and stuff. So there's a few other things, but they were the two main ones.
And was it a really different feel kind of playing with a British crowd behind you?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. More so Queens, actually, because Queens is, I don't know if you've ever been to tennis tournaments, but Queens is like quite an enclosed tournament. So, you know, the fans are really on you.
Yeah.
Whereas Wimbledon Centre Court's amazing. And obviously there's however many people in there, 15,000 people, but it's quite a big stadium. So you don't feel, and they've got quite, I know it's weird, there's like 8 foot or probably 15 foot gap between the court and the fans. Whereas at Queens, it's like a lot more confined spaces. So you kind of feel it more. But yeah, I mean, the British fans are amazing. And you know, they always... Every British tennis player turned into David Beckham for the week, don't they? Everyone thinks you're going to be the one. Because at that stage, Andy had never won Wimbledon. So it's like everyone thinks you're going to be the one that's going to, you know, is this now our great white hope that's going to go and do it? But yeah, it was an amazing, amazing experience.
And do you still follow tennis now, or have you kind of stepped away from it completely?
No, fell out of love with it completely. I haven't picked up a racket for 5 years, probably.
Wow.
Don't even watch it. Don't think I watched Wimbledon final this year. Did watch the Netflix program recently, the Breakpoint thing. I did watch a bit of that.
I'm three episodes into that.
Yeah, I only really watched it because I know Nick Kyrgios a little bit, and I knew he would be good entertainment. But I watched it for that reason. Yeah, but no, I don't follow it. I don't follow it at all.
Yeah, and this is probably a bit of a cliche, and I'm sure you've been asked it lots of times before. But what do you think you've taken from that kind of professional sports background into your business career?
Good question. I don't think I have been asked that before, really. I think the obvious one is just the willingness to win, which I don't know whether that's good or bad, by the way. That might be a bad trait. But I think having spent your whole life, you know, trying to win, and, you know, the hunger to succeed and the hunger to, you know, put the extra long hours in to be better than the person down the road that you're playing against, I think maybe just the winning. But again, that comes with its downfall, right? Because if you lose, you also have the potential to be spoiled and annoyed and, you know, you can't win every client, right? So, but I think the willingness to succeed, just the hard graft and the competitive instinct, I think, I guess, in me from the sporting days is probably the one thing I'd say that probably, well, it has to help. It just has its downfalls as well, but it has to be a help.
Yeah. And how, so obviously you mentioned your career, kind of tennis career ended when you were sort of 24, unfortunately, due to injury. So what did you then move on to, and how did you kind of end up from tennis into business and then eventually onto creating Volley?
Do you know what? I did all sorts. Some good, some bad. Invested money. I'd made a little bit of money on my tennis, so I invested in a few things. Some went well, some went bad. I had an insurance investment, a company in insurance. I did some stuff in events, which was the natural progression because I had such good contacts that people always wanted to go, you know, meet Nadal or meet Federer and go to Wimbledon and stuff. So I did some stuff with that. Some property stuff. And I kind of just always, I guess, been semi-entrepreneurial. I mean, even when I was on the tour, you know, I'm one daft story, but just sums me up, I guess. I don't know, again, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. But you remember when Abercrombie & Fitch came to the UK and it was like the number one brand globally?
I did, indeed.
I was still buying Abercrombie & Fitch in America because, like, it was really cheap over there, and bringing it back and selling it to mates at school and stuff. I've always been quite entrepreneurial. And then I guess it was the investment that I had in a foreign exchange company. I don't know if that was going to be one of your next questions, but in a foreign exchange company that... I joined a few dots and put some yachts into, you know, because obviously they have such huge exposure, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, that then that's how Volley became kind of born, really.
And in like very basic terms for people that aren't already familiar, what does Volley do and how does it help super yachts?
The best way of explaining it probably is if you class a yacht as a mid-cap business, because obviously these boats have huge budgets, which you'd expect, you know, they're floating palaces and going around the world, and they're also traveling in multi-currencies, and the captains are awesome captains, but they're not all qualified, you know, which they'd openly admit. CFOs and finance directors, they haven't come through, well, some might have done, but they've spent their life at sea. So as the budget, I think, have got bigger, it's trying to help them manage that money in a simple, more efficient way. So if you imagine any business and you have an accounting platform, you have a credit card, you have a bank, you have a foreign exchange provider, maybe if you've got international exposure, we just correlate all that into one place. So it's like one-stop shop for the full financial treasury management. So it's just trying to give them one platform. They don't need to leave it. They can live and breathe it to run the entire boat cost. That's what we do.
And was there a kind of specific moment when you spotted that gap in the market and you thought, I can do something here?
It was clients, really. I met three or four captains that were doing foreign exchange with us, and they all kind of said, oh, it's a nightmare. Like, you know, lick and stick was one of the common names that they said, where, you know, they'd be putting post-it notes and receipts onto an A4 piece of paper, scanning it, sending it back by, you know, by email trail back to the family office as to how they, and that's how they were running it. And it was just all done very, you know, antiquated. They were getting shoehorned into, you know, some of the larger accountancy platforms that are built for large organizations, which, again, as I say, a captain, extremely intelligent, bright people, but they're not financial controllers. So trying to figure out the way around foreign exchange journals was too hard. So it was in meeting two or three captains, and then that's when I met Rob, our CTO, that had built a system kind of really just for one boat. He's a very, very, very bright developer, and he built something for one boat. I took a look at it and thought, this probably does the trick. And because I'd had an investment in another card provider and a MasterCard provider, I just thought, hang on, if you can join these dots, and, you know, how do you get the data back to well, mobile app would make that quick for the crew. How do you get, you know, well, if you reconcile and you get an API from the card provider into the platform, that'll make the data accurate. So we just kind of started thinking that way, and that's where we got to where we are today.
And were you surprised at how, as you say, kind of antiquated the system was? You know, we see these super yachts, they're cutting edge technology, and yet the way they're being run as businesses is kind of, you know.
Yeah, hugely. Yeah, it shocked me. And still does to a degree. You know, we still meet huge boats with, you know, huge high profile owners that are clearly extremely bright and have built amazing businesses and world renowned businesses that, you know, flagship names that we'd all know. But in some of them are still running, you know, Excel spreadsheets and cash and just, yeah, it shocks me, because, you know, some of our boats will have huge budgets, and they're like proper businesses. They're not, you know, they're not small targets or small budgets. They're huge budgets, and they're just being run almost back of a fag packet, probably the wrong word, but it's a little bit like that at times.
And also, Volley's been around, is it 5 years now that Volley's?
About 5 years. I mean, three properly, because we kind of, you know, I tried to fund it and did fund it on my own for a while and got it to where it was. But now we've took proper investment, and it's probably 3 years we've had a proper run at it then.
And since then, there's been some other kind of similar sounding platforms, without naming names, that have come onto the market. How does Volley differ in what it's offering?
Competitors, you'd say, wouldn't you? Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Competition's healthy. How are we different? Well, we're just a full platform. You know, there's plenty of card providers. There's a multitude of card providers out there that just do card. There's a few now entering the space that kind of have got basic expense management system, but we, you know, we cater for every part of the trail. So we cater for the crew that needs a really easy, you know, integrated card, integrated mobile app that they can just clip three buttons. It is just to get the data back. But we also cater for the really sophisticated, you know, CFO of a huge family office that wants to really interrogate the data. You know, so we're now employing a team of four data scientists to provide the kind of data, well, knowledge and market intelligence really for the boat. So there's other. I mean, a lot of them are just card, a lot of them are just another prepaid card, and that's where we're different, because we're a full end-to-end treasury management solution.
And what's the response been from the industry, you know, particularly over these last 3 years as you've really started to grow the brand?
Good. I mean, look, you always want to grow quicker, but we're nearly 1,000 boats. You know, we're signing 30-40 boats a month probably, as an average. And yeah, the response has been great. We could always improve the product. And now, you know, we're getting a lot of requests for, you know, integrating with other solutions, or can we build other solutions? So we've got a couple of acquisitions that we're in the process of now, buying some of the companies within yachting where we can try and, you know, integrate it and make it a bit more of a one-stop shop. But the response, I think, in the main has been really positive. I mean, I don't know how many we work with, probably 30 of the largest management companies we've got on our books. I should probably know that, but, you know, it's nearly 1,000 boats, which is a big, well, I think quite a big fleet. I don't think there's many companies that work in yachting that would have that amount of, you know, client bank on their system.
And what have been some of the challenges? You know, the super industry can sometimes seem like a bit of a closed shop and not that receptive to particularly, you know, new businesses and new personalities coming in. Have you found that or not really?
Yes and no. You probably know I'm semi-sociable, so we've tried to get out there and mix and meet the right
people. No comment, Ian.
Tried to mix the right people, meet the right people. And I think from that side, we've made real inroads and become, you know, someone said to me ages ago that the best way of selling is, and the most trusting word of people will buy off is their friends. So, you know, I'm a big believer of networking and, you know, looking after clients and listening to their needs and stuff. So that bit was fine. But I think the biggest challenge is just change. Just, you know, people are in their way, they're stuck in their way, they don't want to change. And it's that kind of, I think one thing the super yacht industry is always guilty of is they're running so fast, you know, because the owners are rightfully, because they're paying the bills, such demanding people that, you know, that everyone seems overran and under-resourced and overran would probably be the right way of putting it. So trying to get someone to go three steps back to take a new system in to then go 10 steps forward, is, I think that's been the biggest challenge. You know, a lot of the yacht management companies that we haven't got, or that took a long time to sign, it was that kind of getting them to understand, no, this is gonna save huge amounts of time. But you know, they still have to take that three steps back to go 10 steps forward. So I think that's been the number one challenge.
And from a really practical perspective, how long does that three steps back stage take, do you think? You know, how long does it take to move a yacht across onto the volley platform, get the captain trained, get the crew trained, get everyone kind of up to speed?
It's literally days, weeks at a max. That's the ridiculous thing. But from their point of view, you know, it's all of a sudden what all my data and all my money and all my processes are going to go, you know, are going to go somewhere else that I don't know and I don't trust. And even though we've got so many boats we have now and we've got great testimonials from some of our great clients, it's still just that leap of faith that if this goes wrong, it's like payroll companies, right? It's the number one thing. Moving a payroll company, you really don't want to do, but sometimes you can move and find a much better solution. But they're just kind of, it's the I don't know, it's being scared to move and scared to change, and it's the I don't know what the right word is for it, but that's the hardest thing. It's just trying to convince them to trust you is the hardest thing sometimes.
And how are you looking to continue to develop the product? You kind of touched on that there might be a couple of acquisitions going on. I don't know how much you're allowed to say. What are the kind of next stages?
I can't talk about them, but no, there's some exciting stuff going on that we're in the mix of at the moment, and they're not done, but hopefully they will get done. It's just trying to embed and make our product better and make our product service, just listen to our client. We do loads of admin surveys and client feedback and roundtable sessions with the clients to understand what do they want and what do they like about our system, what do they not like, what do they like about the space, and where can we help them more. And then we're doing quite a lot around the data, just, you know, trying to protect owners, and I think that's a really important part, you know, just to, unfortunately, and it's my biggest bugbear, there still is this super yacht tax. You know, we've done a load of analysis, and unfortunately, you know, the same person can walk in that's buying a tile for a house and pick a number, 100 quid a tile, and then go in with a super yacht and pay £1,000 a tile. And it's just trying to understand that process of how we can help the owners really in that space.
And another thing that you've relatively recently introduced is the treasury management as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that we've hired we've took a couple of people from the banking space. Again, just when we did the piece with yourselves, it was a really intuitive piece, I think, and I think the feedback was pretty strong about it, that they just foreign exchange, just exposure. These people are traveling around the world and going through 7 different currencies in the space of a season, or maybe more on some cases, and it's always the last thing. And this is like any business, right? This is not the super yacht space. I think that's why there's so many foreign exchange companies out there. They it's the thing that they forget, and they don't really plan soon enough sometimes, and it's left till last minute. And in doing that, they get charged exorbitant rates from the banks ultimately. So we've employed a data person, we've employed a couple of people, Henry, who's a great kind of, we got him from a big high profile bank, and we're just trying to help save our clients money, because it's, you know, the difference between 0.5% and 3% on a £3 million budget is a lot of money. And whilst they can afford it, that's the common perception, that they can afford to, you know, they don't need to worry about it. Ultimately, that's our job. I consider it part of our job to protect them against those things.
And I should be able to remember this, given that I actually put the piece together. But can you remember what the estimated saving was for using that kind of Volley FX service?
I should know, because I signed off the people to go and do the research and the data for us. I can't remember the exact figures, right, but I want to say it was like £400,000 or something on that client. And that was a client that had, houses, properties, because that's one space we're in now. We don't just cater for the super yacht. You know, if they've got houses, planes, etc., they can have it all in one place and one platform, because the problem's the same. So, I think it was £400,000. And again, the rate we were seeing was just, I mean, it was terrible. And we will just give a transparent rate. That's what we do. We tell them the rate, and that's what you're locked in at, and move your money to us, and we'll protect you. And it's already started to do quite well, actually. We've made some real impact in that space, and a lot of clients are really understanding it now. They're listening and going, crikey, you know, it's very hard when you put a spreadsheet in front of someone saying this is what you did and this is what you could do and this is the saving for your owner. It's very hard not to do it.
Obviously we're now recording this in January, not the original plan, but we won't dwell on that. Do you have your kind of 2022 figures now? Can you say, you know, definitively the kind of values that you've been dealing with, or how many CPOs you were dealing with last year?
Yeah, I mean, the figures have changed. I mean, obviously, the figures are growing every week. But I mean, we had over 2 billion through our system last year, which was the amount processed through, not through our kind of banking license, but through our through the system in itself, in across the nominal categories, nominal codes of the super yacht. So we, I mean, it's a huge amount of money. And that's what this space brings. It brings people spending a lot of money to have their lifestyle choices that they've worked hard to earn. So and that's growing every week, and every time Johnny goes out there and signs the boat, that's another X amount of million that comes onto our system.
And obviously, as we discussed, Volley's been very successful in the super yacht industry, but you've now taken the platform and you're expanding it into the music industry. How did that come about?
Yeah, and I'm learning very quick they could not be two industries further apart. Definitely. It came about through a friend of mine. You know, if you replace the same thing we discussed before, if you replace a super yacht with, you know, a Coldplay band, they're traveling around the world, they're going on tour to 50 countries, they're spending currencies in 30 different countries, they've got a load of people running as fast as they can to make sure he gets it, or the band get the requirements, and it's, you know, it's lighting, it's last minute thing, purchasing Prague for, you know, for the, I don't know, whatever, the lighting that's broke, etc., and it's riders and it's champagne for parties, etc. And it's exactly the same problem. It's a tour manager that's running as fast as he can with a very demanding artist around the world with 200 crew behind him, loads of cash being spent, etc., and no real way of reconciling it. And again, just, you know, the tour manager's there, he's extremely talented, he's probably designed the set, he's got involved with the production manager, he's looked after the artist, and he gets the whole concept, but he doesn't understand sometimes how the best way of managing that money is. So it's exactly the same problem. So we started it about a year ago. We started our first round of research. It's starting to take shape now. We've done the same as yachting. The best way is to listen to the clients and what do you need and what are the best things that we could, you know, that we can help you with. And we've hired a load of people from within the music space, which is what we did with yachting. And we're now kind of, you know, building a music product from within. And it's been, yeah, it's good. We've had really good feedback. We've got a multitude of some very high profile artists out there now using the system. One male artist who would be, I think if you Google, probably the number one selling artist globally ever, is currently using the system, and they love it. And, you know, we've had testimonials, and it's saving the money, it's, you know, it's streamlined the processes. It was the same with you know, we asked a large yacht owner's rep about 4 years ago, you know, when would you get the report to tell you what you spent in July? And it was like, well, I might find out in September. And that baffled me, when you've got such real-time reporting now, which is what we give. And it was the same, you know, with artists. I asked a very, very, very high-profile artist. I'm talking very high-profile, probably top 10 in the world. And I said, just out of interest, when, you know, if your budget for your tour, you're due to make, pick a number, £10 million, pick a number. You know, after 6 months, will you know whether you're on track with that? When will you know that you're going to make it? And he was like, no, I'll know. I'll get a check 6 months after, just saying you've made 8 million or you've made 12 million or whatever that figure is. They're just running too quick, and they didn't have real time reporting, which is what we bring. You know, with our system, you could click in, that same artist could click in today on our system and say, right, okay, I'm on track for my budget, or I've made more money because ticket sales in Japan were triple what we thought they'd be. So yeah, that's what we're trying to achieve, and it's going well. It's going well.
And we spoke about on the super yacht side, the kind of importance of building, you know, relationships and friendships within the industry. Is that the same for the music side as well?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. You know, relationships are key, and you get into the, you know, you've got to go and spend time in the space and get to know the space and get to understand the space. The biggest problem, I think, that some competitors of ours have been criticized in both spaces, you know, you can't just come in and take the money and run. You have to properly, you know, support the industry. You know, you probably know we do a load of charity stuff, and we try and support events, and we try and support other organizations, and that's you have to do that in order to grow a business, and especially grow a business quickly when no one knows you. I mean, no one knew us when we launched Volley Music. No one knew us, and the first thing they did, they went online and they were like, "You do super yachts? What use is that to me?" You know, because they're completely different. One thing I would like to say, actually, because there's a lot of rumors going around that we're pulling out of yachting. Well, just to be clear, we're double downing on yachting, hence making a couple of acquisitions. So we keep hearing these lovely rumors that apparently we're pulling out of yachting and going to music, but we're definitely not. Yachting is our priority.
And you did say at the start, like, they are surprisingly, you know, even though it's a similar concept in terms of looking at the financials, they're very different industries. What do you think are some of those kind of key differences?
I'm not sure how to answer it best. They're just poles apart, you know. I couldn't think of the best way of answering it. I mean, what would be really frank and probably controversial to say, but they're lights ahead, you know, of the whole diversity, inclusivity, and, you know, really, really supporting that whole space. Mental health and stuff. I think yachting's done a really good job in a short period of time to start supporting that, but it's a very caring, creative space, the music space. You know, they're less bothered about money. You know, the half the companies don't even make money. I mean, I've got very close friends of mine in the space that are extremely busy and just not that commercial, because they're just so creative, and it's more about doing good and, you know, and doing good for the artists and doing good for the people around them and stuff. So they're just poles apart. They're just nothing like each other. And you're dealing with very creative people, because ultimately, to be an artist manager, you've got to be creative yourself. You know, to understand an artist, to understand a Lady Gaga, you've got to be really creative yourself to actually understand that concept of how, what makes her mind tick and what makes her, you know, what the best thing is for her. So it's a very, very laid back creative space. I mean, literally, like, the amount of people you go for a meeting that, yeah, I'm going to call you at 3 o'clock today and let's get the contract signed. I've probably still not heard from that person 6 months later, because they've been busy off doing what they do, and it's just business isn't their priority sometimes. It's the artists that they take care of.
And where do you see the future of the kind of Volley Music side of the business? Obviously, you mentioned superyachts are kind of the main priority, but where would you like to see Volley Music go?
Just follow the same path as yachting, really. You know, just if we can keep and continue to sign artists and continue to grow the product and continue to, you know, and what. They're poles apart, but the product overlaps in every single way. You know, multi-budgets, which is one of the pieces that we're just building at the moment, you know, for yachting space, they want to be able to manage, you know, sometimes a refit, an operational budget, a, you know, maybe an owner's spend. Someone in my team would give better examples than that, I'm sure. But, you know, they want to be able to run 3 or 4 multi-budgets, then consolidate it into one budget. And in music, it's no different. They want to run corporate gigs. They want to run writing budgets. They want to run, you know, North America tour, maybe South America tour, European tour, et cetera, and consolidate it into the artist's overall viewpoint. So most of the product OCR, which we're just launching shortly, which is obviously the OCR technology, the recognition for reading your invoices, et cetera. Again, both sectors need it. So the plus is 95% of the product just overlaps the same. It's the same requirements, because ultimately it's whether it's an artist or a boat traveling around the world, they all need the same thing.
And obviously the current economic situation is not too cheerful. How do you see that impacting either business or both businesses?
Good question again. I mean, the recession, I really, hand on heart, don't think is going to affect the yachting space. Because the, you know, if you call them the rich, if that's the right terminology, they're getting richer, you know, and they're always going to make money, and they're always going to find ways to make money. And, you know, in any downfall, there's always people that make money. You know, COVID being an example, there's a load of people that had terrible times and companies that went bust, but there's a load of people that were on the right side of it with pharmaceuticals or vaccines or whatever the equipment's called, that made a load of money as well. So there's, and, you know, luxury watches made a load of money because everyone couldn't go on holiday to spend the money. So there's always going to be ups and downs, but I think ultimately the rich are just going to get richer. So I don't think it's going to affect the market. The more scary thing is obviously the sanctions. You know, there's a load of pieces in the press this week about the more sanctions and different sanction stories that are happening. So that's worrying for the yachting space, but I don't think the recession. The music space, I think my gut feel, which I might be completely wrong, is that obviously, it's going to affect, you know, the cost of living is going through the roof. People are really struggling. We just gave a load of, we've just done a load for charities and stuff. You probably read about, you know, I bought 400 Christmas presents or 400 presents for children in underprivileged areas in Manchester. And we're doing a lot on that side, and staff had cost of living bonuses, etc. So there is a real problem with cost of living that is scary. However, I think people always find the money to go and buy a £50 concert ticket because they still need some sort of, you know, happiness in their life. And if they love Robbie Williams, they're going to still go and buy a ticket for Robbie Williams because they like it. And they'll choose to sacrifice some other things. But it's definitely going to affect music more than yachting, that's for sure.
And how do you ensure that Volley's business is recession-proof?
I don't think you can, really, apart from protect your people, protect your staff, and continue to grow as quick as you can and as best you can and deliver a good product. Ultimately, in yachting, as I say, I don't think they'll be affected. And if you build the right product, they'll keep buying it. And in music, you could argue, you know, for artists and for tours, etc. And I think we covered this maybe in one of the pieces, I think it was with Boat, you know, ultimately, an artist, certainly Robbie Williams, using an example, is always going to want to save money, but he's obviously also not, you know, he's got extreme net worth and his gas bill going up isn't going to crucify him. But there's a load of artists that are lower down that are building up that, you know, that are still coming through as a first-time record label and signed their first art, they've done their first song or the first album, that aren't in that situation. So ultimately, in us giving them more transparent reporting and helping them save money and telling them that you're overpaying your lighting and production thing because, you know, the guy down the road spending half the money that you are, if anything, we can be an added bonus to help them save money. So in which case, then they probably will continue to buy our services.
And you're obviously in Monaco today, but you mentioned your staff and obviously the company's based in Cheshire. Is that important to you that it is a company that's growing and is based outside of London? So much of the UK becomes kind of London centric.
Yeah, and look, London's the hub of shore, but Manchester has become, you know, a bit of a tech hub itself. But ultimately what we deliver, we can be based everywhere, right? You know, you look at Airbnb and some of these great big firms right now that are, you know, everyone's working from home and a lot of people have tried this remote working. So I don't think it's important as long as we can get out to see the clients in Monaco or, you know, West Palm and get over to the States stuff. As long as we can see the clients, I don't think it matters where we're based, really.
And what's next for Volley? Have you got a 5-year plan, 10-year plan? Are you retiring on a beach somewhere?
No. Do you know what my personal aim this year, and it's going to sound really twee, I'm going to be a lot more philanthropic. I've decided. Okay.
That's impressive.
I had a meeting with my lawyer the other day, who's a very good personal friend, and one of the things that came up was like, Ian, if you start doing really well, don't be a beep, 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 and give back and support more people and stuff. You know, I've got a friend whose dad charges his daughter interest. I mean, like, how ridiculous, like, you know what I mean? Like, just be a nice person and try and do more. So you saw the school thing and we're going to do a lot more for charity this year. So that's one of my personal aims, which is nothing to do with your question. But from a business point of view, just keep growing, keep making the product better, expanding the product base. You know, we've got great clients now and what else can we help them with? And that's where the acquisitions are going at the moment. And just try and expand the product bank and grow.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing more about those acquisitions when you can let us know.
Yeah, you will hear shortly, I'm sure. You'll be first to know at Boat, I can guarantee you.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for finally finding the time to fit us in for this interview.
No, thank you and Boat for your support. You've been great. So it's a pleasure to do.